Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where you'll get actionable tips and advice on major gifts, direct response fundraising, legacy giving, and much more from leading experts in the nonprofit sector. Now, here are your hosts of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, Andrew Olson and Roy Jones.
Good morning. This is Andrew Olson, host of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, and I'm so excited to be here today with my good friend, Fred Clayton, the president of Orlando Union Rescue Mission. Fred, good morning.
Good morning, Andrew. Thank you for having me. It's a treat to be here.
Awesome, man. Hey, I'm also really grateful that we can be together today in beautiful Palm Springs, California at the CityGate Network Conference. You know, it's always nice, at least for me. You live in a, you know, Florida beach community. I'm stuck in Minneapolis where we get 50 inches of snow every year. So it's nice to be with you today in Palm Springs. I'd love if you could just take a moment and share with us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the mission.
Okay, first let me talk about the mission. We're 70 years old. We were founded 70 years ago, 1948, by four businessmen in downtown Orlando who identified what they thought was a crisis in homelessness because there were six homeless guys hanging around the city. So they, in conjunction with a local Methodist church in downtown, they rented some space and brought in four beds just for an overnight shelter. And in the ensuing 70 years, the ministry has expanded. We now operate two residential facilities, our men's home, where we take care of 120 guests, all single men, full-time. They live with us and everything, broom, board, clothing, everything they need is free. And then we also have a family home where we take care of single women without kids, single moms with their children, intact couples with their children, and we now have four single dads with kids. Wow. A total of 138 guests, including 67 kids, 17 and under, living with us.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, it is. And what we try to do, the centerpiece is of our ministry is our discipleship program. And in that, we provide the education, training, counseling, and other assistance our guests need so when they leave us, they will be independent and self-sufficient permanently. Awesome. So they escape homelessness for the rest of their lives.
That's great. Now give us a little background on yourself.
Okay. I am, by training, I'm a lawyer and businessman. I'm neither smart enough nor good enough to have been involved in ministry or missions my whole career. I joined the board of the mission, the Orlando Union Rescue Mission, about 10 years ago, and founded and was running a business that we sold probably 4 years ago, and was then volunteering about 20 hours a week at the mission to obtain approval for a new men's home we were investigating. And we needed to make a change in leadership at the mission, so the board asked me to become their interim president, and I promised I would stay for 6 months, and I'm now 42 months into my six-month tenure as president of the mission.
Well, I think I should say congratulations for that.
Well, you should.
Maybe condolences. I don't know.
It has been an unalloyed blessing to be at the mission.
That's awesome.
Like most folks I know who work in the secular occupation, I worked hard, and I spent a lot of time, especially when we were starting and building businesses, but nothing has consumed me like the mission has. I never understood what it was to think almost every conscious hour of the day about our guests and the problems they face and the celebrating the successes they enjoy as they begin to transform their lives.
That's really interesting. So you made a leap from a legal career to leading a rescue ministry. I'm curious, what have you found to be the greatest challenges in that transition?
Okay.
And what have you learned?
Okay. Well, interestingly, one of the first things I learned is that there are really different and distinct populations of homeless people.
Okay.
Now I know the terms of art involved, like chronically homeless and episodically homeless, that we think roughly 15 to 18% of the folks out there who are homeless have a physical or mental impairment that will ever prevent them from being independent.
Okay.
And those are called the chronically homeless. Our ministry at the mission is we aren't focused on those folks. We're focused on the people who can become independent and self-sufficient.
Okay.
And then to find out that for those folks, the roughly 80 to 85% of homeless on the streets, at the risk of sounding harsh, they are not there by coincidence or because of someone else's actions. They have typically engaged in a series of bad decisions that rendered them homeless.
Okay.
So at the mission, we understand we can give them an apartment and some money, But unless we change the underlying behavior, unless they go through a transformation, they'll end up homeless again in pretty short order. So we have to work on the underlying causes that rendered them homeless in the first place. And unless we can do that, all we're doing is providing immediate relief, but encouraging a recurrence of the homelessness issue.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then, so the greatest challenge I have experienced is recognizing that neither the mission nor I can solve all those problems for our guests. As a Christian, I feel compelled to do everything I can to help people. And at the mission, I have an extraordinary opportunity to exercise that responsibility. I mean, I get to work with them literally on a daily basis and meet with them. And it breaks my heart and could discourage me when I see somebody who ultimately declines the assistance and doesn't let Jesus soften their heart. That's the way I describe it, that we immerse them in the gospel because we know they long-term, they can't be successful typically in life or in the more profound issues as in the human existence unless they get to know Jesus. So that's one of the things we really focus on, especially when they first move in. So the challenge is being able to accept the fact that not all our guests are going to change either spiritually or functionally, and not letting it discourage me. And the thing that sustains me is seeing those guests who succeed, who really, we had a young lady, I got a call from a pastor, I happened to be at the office, and it was probably 8:30 at night, and he had discovered a young lady living in a storage shed.
Okay.
And wanted to know whether we had room for her. Well, we did not have a bed. And I said, so, Pastor, is she really sleeping in a storage? And she said, he said, absolutely. And so I said, well, we have a TV room that has a couch, and we can make that available. She can sleep on a couch. It's better than a storage shed. So we brought her in, and she had dropped out of school. She was 20 years old. She had dropped out of school in the 11th grade and had been defiant with her parents. And told us a story that her parents were abusive and didn't love her, and none of it was true. Her parents, when she dropped out of school in the 11th grade, said, okay, you need, in the interim, before you end up going back to school, you need to get a job, and here are the rules if you want to live at our house. And they were routine rules, curfew and behavior and no drug use, and she defied it all. And she became aggressively disobedient to them.
Okay.
And eventually they ran out of patience and had to exercise some tough love and said, you need to choose either you live by our rules or you have to live somewhere else. And she, with what I consider kind of teenage bravado, said, well, I've got friends who will let me live with them. And so I'm moving out. And those friends tired of the situation as quickly as her parents did. And so she found herself living literally in a storage shed. And the owner of the storage shed did not know it. She would sneak in there at night and sleep in there. So we moved her in. And for the first couple of days, she was grateful and cooperative, and then she began chafing. Our program is restrictive and very disciplined, and we have a 5:30 curfew, and they have to sign in and out of our facility. And we have an accredited high school on campus for our adults, and she had to go to school, and she resisted all this. Finally, God began to soften her heart, and we worked out a reconciliation with her parents.
Okay.
They came to visit her. We surprised her with a visit from her parents. And this was probably 3 months into her tenure. She didn't know they were going to be there. And of course, there were a lot of tears, and it was really, really wonderful and sentimental. And she said, I want to come home. And her mom said, great. We want you home as soon as you finish the program at the mission. And so we have a graduation ceremony. She's been at the mission 8 months. She is graduating on June 30th. We have 15 graduates this year, high school diplomas to award. So when I see her change her life, and let me back up. When I see Jesus change her life, she accepted him, began to recognize that she was at the mission not because anybody had abused her or somebody had conspired against her or the man had kept her down in some way. It was that she had made bad decisions.
Sure.
And recognized that and began learning how to make better decisions. And so now we have this enormous confidence that she will be, when she leaves us, she'll be successful. She already has a job. And at the mission, when they work, everything is still free. They give us their paycheck. We give them 25% back in spendable cash. 75% goes into a savings account in their names. So when she leaves, she'll have this nest egg.
That's wonderful.
So she gets all the money and a forced savings account. And what we tell her is that 75% you've been saving, that's what it's going to cost you to live in rent and utilities and insurance, all that stuff. That's what it's going to cost you. So everything you want to indulge in that's not essential is a 25%. So that's what you can expect to, your life to be like. And so when I see somebody go through that process and make that change and walk away with a life of dignity and hope, that sustains me for those difficult times where people resist us and resist Christ and leave after a year before they're ready to leave, and they've got a job and they think they've done it. And we, with the term we use, they think, or they'll even say, no, no, I've got this. I really don't need your help. I don't need God's help. I've got this now. I've been sober and I don't need your help. And it's very, well, it's never the case.
Yeah, for sure. Never the case for any of us.
That's exactly right.
Right. The incidence of homelessness seems to be increasing nationally. You know, in the communities that I visit, I see it all the time. I know that you all see it as well. And you've been embarking for the last couple of years on a major campaign to increase your capacity to serve the homeless in the Orlando area. Talk to me a little bit about what's been most exciting to you in that expansion process.
Okay. Well, there are two things. First off, the consequences of our campaign in an expanded facility where right now we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have 120 men living with us full-time at our men's home. We'll increase that to 210 guests when we move into the new facility within 30 days. So we'll be able to take 90 more men in Orlando off the streets and provide them an opportunity to transform their lives. But that is the single most exciting aspect of it.
Awesome.
Now, there are different components to that. We'll be expanding some of our internal ministries. We'll provide a more intense and focused substance abuse recovery program. We'll be able to reach out to community partners and organizations that generally serve the same folks we do, especially ones who are Christ-centered. So we will enhance our ability to serve because we'll be working more closely with more organizations.
Okay.
In the process, we needed to raise a total of about $6 million. And that has been both a challenging and a rewarding experience. We went around with this whole process backwards, kind of.
Okay.
The initial impetus for building our new men's home was our current men's home is in downtown Orlando, and it sits on a city block that is immediately adjacent to the Amway Arena, which is where the Orlando Magic NBA team plays. The Orlando Magic have bought up our city block. They now are our landlord, with the idea they've already designed and are initiating developing the partnerships to do this, to build a $200 million retail, residential, office complex on this site.
Okay.
We occupied about 1/6 of that site, and it will shock most of your listeners to understand that our use wasn't necessarily consistent with their vision for their new parcel.
I can imagine, yes.
So one of the programs we have is an emergency shelter for our men, where we have about 40 men who check in every day at 3:30 in the afternoon, and we provide them overnight shelter, food, chapel service, and a place to sleep, and then reverse that in the morning, and then they're on their way. And we use that as a recruiting tool for our long-term program. Well, the Magic probably didn't envision enthusiastically the idea of our 40 guys waiting outside and using the lobby of the new upscale hotel they're going to build on that site as their congregating place before they check into the mission. So they had an incentive to make it attractive to us. They've been a wonderful partner through this. And they said, we want to do this as soon as possible. It's costing us. They had already bought 3/4 of the entire city block before we worked out a deal with them. So they'd already invested millions of dollars. And every day is the time cost of money. So they want to get this done as quickly as possible. So they said, we'll find you another place. And they worked with us on finding the new location. And we began renovating an old motel to serve as our new men's home before we began a capital campaign. Mm-hmm. So we have reversed the normal process. And I would tell everybody out there, please don't do what we did. Raise your funds. If there's any way around it, raise your funds first and then begin construction. Because first off, you don't have to worry about whether you can raise all the funds.
Right.
And second, it is people typically give more enthusiastically to an idea of a building that's coming out of the ground or that's being going to be renovated than to retire debt.
For sure.
Now, in ours, the Magic were kind enough, gave us an interest-free loan to for the renovation to the extent we needed it, and we're paying it off as we raise funds. So it's all going to work out. We'll be debt-free by the end of this year. So it worked out perfectly. God had a plan in this. At the mission, we felt uneasy at times about this. We hate the idea of assuming a lot of debt, but it's worked out, and it's been beneficial, and it's allowed us to develop our new facility and open these new ministries before we would have been able to do 2 years, really, before we would have been able to do so otherwise. Okay. So we're extraordinarily grateful for the entire process.
So you came to the mission with, I suspect, a lot of great connections to the business community because of your prior work. I think our listeners would appreciate hearing a little bit about, you know, throughout your campaign, how you actively engaged the business community and also high net worth individuals to bring them along, get them excited about what was going on at the ministry. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, that's interesting because that's one of the things I really thought that I was bringing to the mission when I came there was my prior professional environment had been the business community in Orlando. And what I find out, and this shouldn't have surprised me, but I'm really slow-witted and thick-headed, so I don't really appreciate things as quickly as I should, that very few of the folks who are good targets for development, because both they have resources and they have a heart for the kind of ministries we conduct, knew about the mission. Now, I was in exactly that position a little over 10 years ago when the chairman of our board asked me to join the board. And I had a bunch of, I should be embarrassed and humiliated to admit this publicly, but I have no conscience, so I'm not, that I made a bunch of flimsy, self-absorbed excuses why I couldn't join the board about being too busy and, oh, I was occupied in so many other worthwhile endeavors. And our board president said the perfect thing. That's, I understand, Freddie. Tell you what, just come by and take a tour of the mission. That's all I want you to do. And I took a tour, and it not only changed my perspective, it changed my life. I saw what God was doing there, and I said what we now call the four magic words. I had no idea. Huh. I did not know there was an organization doing that in Orlando to that many people who desperately need the help, all for the love of Christ. So I realized what I really need to do with my friends and colleagues and contacts in the business community is get them down for a tour and show them, because they say almost to a person, I had no idea. Oh my gosh, you mean you want me to participate in this? I would love to. Now, sadly, they don't all say that as quickly as I would like them to, but it changes their perspectives. Those folks, even the non-believers out there, realize that we are just about the only program in Orlando that offers a long-term solution to the homelessness problem. Okay. And because I work in downtown Orlando, I know the businessmen in Orlando are concerned about the number of homeless who, to be candid, bother their clients and customers.
Sure.
And I have enormous empathy for those businessmen. They don't want to hurt or ignore or neglect anybody, but that similarly, they don't want their clients and customers to be hassled.
Sure.
And then they're looking for a solution. My experience has been that the solutions that most of the governmental organizations come up with are stopgap measures or are primarily visual impacts. Hmm. We'll hide the problem without worrying about a long-term solution.
Okay.
When I get to talk to businessmen, they see that the mission provides a long-term permanent solution for every individual who succeeds in our program. And they respond to that.
Okay.
I mean, both from a professional interest and from either a spiritual interest, because they realize that we really are Christ-centered, that we tell all of our guests, the only reason we even have an operation is because we realize how much God loves us, and all he wants us to do is share that love in a specific way. And the mission's way is by helping the homeless. Now, every other believer out there has a ministry in which they try to share God's love. That's the way God, I think, has called the Orlando Union Rescue Mission to share it. And people respond because they really do see we love our guests, we hold them accountable, and we give them the tools they need to equip themselves for long-term independence. So that's people respond. And so what I try to do is call people, even if I have to beg, plead, threaten, anything, truly implore, to just to get them to come take a tour. I know that as busy as any businessman is, he has 45 minutes
sure.
in the next month to give me to take a tour. And that's what I'll do. I say, come on, you tell me how busy you are. Oh, look, I've been there. I started and built two businesses that we sold. I know how much time you spend there, but you've got 45 minutes to come out and take a tour. And inevitably, I wear them out. I do in a nice, I hope it's a nice way, but I wear them out and I'll say, okay, you can't do this week. I'll call you Tuesday. And I let them, so I warn them, I'm calling Tuesday. And they ultimately realize that I'm not going to start calling until either one of two things happens. They come down or they mistreat me so badly that I'll quit. And I am very, very durable. and I can take a lot of mistreatment before I realize that what they're doing. And most of them are nice people, so they don't want to do that.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make in our industry is we stop asking when it starts to feel just a little bit uncomfortable.
Right.
Not realizing that if we can just, you know, sustain the uncomfortable experience a little bit more, it's usually that third or fourth or fifth time that we make the ask that someone actually says yes to us, whether it's for a gift or even for a tour. So I appreciate hearing that, you know, you guys are pretty tenacious about how you approach that.
And one of the things I realized is that for specifically for the tour or for meeting, when I got to the mission, we had a lot of longtime donors who may not have given a whole lot, but they've been really, really regular. They've been enormously faithful to the mission. And we didn't even know any of them. Hmm. We had never met them personally. So I began calling them. And all I said was, let me come by and thank you in person. Almost to a person, what they said was, oh, no, you don't need to thank me. And I'd say, no, really. Eventually, what I would do is say, okay, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me, because I need to thank you, because we haven't done that. Right. And would you please indulge me? Do me the favor of let me come by and meet you.
Interesting.
And thank you in person. And people, especially generous people, and they've already demonstrated their generosity by giving, they want to accommodate you.
Yeah.
So if you ask them for a favor, as opposed to starting out by saying, oh, no, look, it's for you. I do that. I mean, I do say, Andrew, please let me come. But look, you are so generous, so faithful. You have transformed so many lives here at the mission. I'd like to come and thank you in person. And because you're generous and you're unassuming and self-effacing, no, you don't need to thank me. Knowing that the mission is using the funds appropriately is all the thanks I need. Hmm. I must have heard that 200 times. And they're sincere.
Sure, yeah.
And I would persist. And I would write them a note then. And one of the things I have found is a handwritten note. Now, I have the world's cheapest stationery. I do. It is a notepad with, you know, probably 20-pound bond paper. And it just says, I think it may say, from the desk over, just Freddie Clayton at the top. And I write probably 8 to 10 personal notes a day at night, and to donors and to prospects. And mostly they're just thank yous. I get more expressions of gratitude and more attention for handwritten notes than I do anything else, because people have told me no one does that anymore.
It's a lost art. Absolutely.
And it is, I will tell you, it's not fun. And I wish I could tell you that I am so grateful, that I am filled with inspiration to do it, and that I love doing it every night. It's one of the most fulfilling things I do. It's not. It is a pain, but I won't go home until I do it. Hmm. And I'm a very undisciplined person, so I have to impose discipline on myself. And one of the ways I do it, and specifically, is writing those notes at night. So when I talk to somebody and he won't let me come see him, I'll write him a note and say, I hope you won't mind if I call you in 2 weeks. Hmm. So I put them on guard, but I've also told them, so they aren't mad at me when I call, because I've already warned them I'm calling.
For sure.
And then I'll ask them for the favor. Just let me come by. And it really is, I tell them, I promise you it will be no more than 10 minutes. And if he doesn't respond and we don't get engaged, I'm gone in 10 minutes. Typically what happens is I start telling stories about the mission, like this young lady I told you about. that's what they want to hear. They want to hear that God really is moving in these lives and that their money is making a difference. That when that's what I tell them. These ministries exist and these success stories occur because you are generous.
Absolutely.
That
Absolutely.
You are transforming these lives. And once they hear the stories, then they want to ask about the mission, typically.
That makes a lot of sense. So we are just about out of time, but I want to ask you one last question that I think would be helpful to many of our listeners. And that is, if you dial the clock back 4 years to your initial onboarding at the mission as the president, if there's somebody else who's kind of in that space right now that's just taken a new leadership role, what are the one or two pieces of advice that you would give someone to help them launch successfully into a role like yours?
The first thing I would tell you is what for me has been the biggest surprise and the biggest blessing, and that is get to know the guests. Go out and meet the folks you're serving. Once or twice a week, I get up real early, and I hate this, but I try to do it with a smile. I go and eat with our guys at the men's home. They eat at 6 in the morning, so I got to get up and dressed and out and at the men's home at 6 in the morning to meet the guys. It makes such a huge difference in their lives. And I get to know what they're really like and what problems they're encountering and difficulties they have. That would be, and as a result, these people are friends. So I will take them out just myself and we'll go out and do community work projects.
Wow.
And so they love it. They love going out and helping. And so we now have this brigade. We've begun working with some inner city communities in Orlando, cleaning up neighborhoods. And we'll show up with 30 guys and we'll help the neighborhood association clean up. And then we'll provide a cookout. We'll bring our grill and cook out at the community center and feed everybody. And it's such a cool, but it's because we get to know the guests.
Right.
And so I would tell you the most first thing to do is get to know the guests who are living at the mission. Or if you don't have a full-time residential, who are the guys staying with you at night? Get to know them because that will both inspire you and give you insight into what they're like. And the second would be to build a good team. I was incredibly blessed to inherit most of our team. We had a really good infrastructure of faithful, dedicated saints in place who want to help you, who have the same heart to help the people. But because there's no way one person can do anything, especially in a growing mission where you're looking to expand your ministries, there's no way you can do everything. You have to learn to delegate and to trust the people. And the only way you can trust them is if you have good folks working there.
Absolutely.
So to the extent I can offer anybody advice, I make no warranty about the value of it, but that's what I would tell you.
Man, I appreciate you being here with us today and sharing. Thank you so much. It was great to have you.
It's been my pleasure, and it's a treat to be here, and good luck on everything, Andrew.
Thank you. One last thing. If somebody listening to this podcast wants to get in touch with you, wants to learn more about the mission, or maybe spend a few minutes just learning from you, what's the easiest way for somebody to get in touch?
I'll give you a phone number and my email address. Great. My email address is Fred, F-R-E-D, .Clayton, C-L-A-Y-T-O-N, @O-U-R-M, for Orlando Union Rescue Mission, .org. It's Fred.Clayton @O-U-R-M.org. And my cell phone number is 407-928-6375, 407-928-6375. And I'm available, sadly, 24 hours a day because the nature of what we do.
For sure.
I hope you could tell from this podcast what I love to do almost more than anything else in the world is talk about what the mission does.
That's awesome. Really appreciate
it. All right. God bless you.
You as well.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, brought to you exclusively by Newport One. Newport One can make a difference in your fundraising so that you can change the world. You can always reach us at podcast@newportone.com. Please take a moment to rate this episode on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. When you rate this episode, it will help more nonprofit leaders just like you to help find us and get the information that they need to raise more funds for their organization. Thanks again for listening today.